What's up, Bandhive crew? James here. And before we jump into this episode, I wanted to ask you a question. Have you ever wished there was a way to connect with me as well as other listeners in real time? I have the solution. I finally got around to making a Bandhive Discord server, which is people have been asking me for years and I just wasn't listening. I wish I had done this sooner because I couldn't be happier with the results. It's been fantastic. And we would love to see you join us. We have discussions about the music business, gear, the podcast, and a general channel as well. You can join the discussion now by visiting bandhive.rocks/discord. Again, that is bandhive.rocks/discord. Welcome to episode 174 of the Bandhive Podcast.
You're listening to the Bandhive Podcast, the number one online resource for DIY bands to learn about the music business and touring. If you want to turn your band into a lean, mean touring machine, you're in the right place. Now, let's get this show on the road.
It is time for another episode of the Bandhive Podcast. My name is James Cross, and I help independent artists tour smart. This week, we have a very special guest. Chad Kowal returns to the show. How are you today, Chad?
I'm doing great. How about yourself?
Glad to hear that. I'm having a fantastic day. It's a pleasure to have you back here on the show. For those who haven't been listening for the duration of the Bandhive Podcast, you were on the show episode 78, which was almost 2 years ago. It was called The Inside Scoop on Top Lining. So if anyone wants to check out Chad's past episode, head on over to bandhive.rocks/78. That's the number 78, and you can check it out there. But today, Chad, there are some huge new developments for you, and I think that's what we're going to talk about today. Do you want to give us a little bit about yourself and where you're at right now?
I guess since the last time we talked, I kind of exited the world of writing top lines for DJs. And I began to start to kind of get the itch to have a solo project. I consider myself a visionary with how I kind of look at my projects. And sometimes with that comes like having an idea of what I want the brand to be and having all the answers before I walk into the situation. And with this being a solo project, I didn't really know initially what I wanted it to be. And then I kind of had like a moment where it all came to me where I was just like, you know, like I really should just let this project be me. Anything that I am, like all the things that I loved as a child and all the things that I love now, just like having it be a conglomerate of all that. And what that meant was tapping into my love of childlike things such as drawing or puppets or character development. And then also when it came to the stylistic side of things, letting myself do whatever I wanted, because I was looking at the span of every time I did a band from the time I was 16 to now. And always what the problem was for me was I would get bored. I would get bored of the style that I played and I would feel too confined within what we did. And even if it was good, I did feel at some point like I was just kind of bored of doing the same thing over and over again. So that was kind of my rule with this project, is whatever I wanted to do is exactly what I would do. And I'm just really excited for this new era for myself, because being a guy that grew up playing in rock bands and then having gone through EDM and top line writing, all this and that, this music feels like it is everything that people could expect from me, but in one collective vehicle. And I'm very thrilled to be able to share it.
That's fantastic. First of all, just seeing the music videos that you've put out, each of them is so different and so unique. It's tough to see music videos from many artists these days, where it's just, especially in the rock and metal world, where it's like the band's playing in a warehouse. That's been done a million times. That does not need to be done again. And so like your videos are a breath of fresh air in comparison. You had one video, I can't remember the name of the song, I'm sorry, but it was from your show that you played a few months ago, which was sold out.
Real Boy.
Yeah, Real Boy, exactly. And you combined the footage of that show with some other elements. So it wasn't just a performance video. And I think that's one of the key things. Like a lot of bands would have been like, okay, cool. Like here's footage from the show. That's it. That can be really cool if you're trying to do like a live recording. But for a music video, you need to take it to the next level, which is what you did. And I never know what to expect with your videos. There's no formula. There's no format. So I think you're spot on with what you were saying there, how you just take whatever's inspiring you, especially at that moment, and you do it. There's no question of, is this going to work? This is going to be fun. Let's do it.
There are a couple rules that my world has, and that's about it as far as things to stick to. One of those is every time that a puppet is shown on screen, it is shown as animate. so that the audience believes that it is a real, living, breathing thing. The whole goal with this project, I'm thinking 20 years from now rather than in the now with how things are. Like, I want to be so calculated with how I'm building everything to where if you zoom out 20 years from now, I'm like an architect. You're like, wow, there was real time and care and effort being placed in all the little details of this thing. And I look at like Damon Albarn with Gorillaz, and that's such a big inspiration for me with this. I want to give fans truly an experience that they can't get anywhere else. And I hope that it can be fun for them to follow along.
And I think that ties in so much. And for those who listen to episode 78, you know that Chad and I are both huge AFI fans. That's how we know each other. I see the same thing with AFI back in the day, all those little hints that they would drop and everything ties together. That really kept fans on the edge of their seat. Now, I'll be honest, I don't know that much about Gorillaz. I enjoy Feel Good Inc. and the other singles they've put out. But knowing that they've done that as well is pretty cool. One of the things we talk about on the show all the time is how artists need to create a connection with their fans and keeping them engaged just by dropping little hints like that. If you have a dedicated fan base, that's huge. It makes such a difference. And speaking of dedicated fan bases, Chad, you did something that most artists would never even dream of doing, which was you sold out your first show ever. There's so much I could say about that, but all I'm going to say for now is how. What did you do?
I will say that the concept in itself was very ambitious and unique in that five artists played. It was The Vegas, Megaflower, Trevor Blinn, and Bryant Powell, and of course myself. All of us are literally best friends. So it's not often that you get a bill like that where you're all that close and you all can kind of work with each other on strategy. Basically, the way that we did it for all of us individually was we were on a shared Apple note and we had basically bubbles with everybody's names that we were going to contact and plus how many tickets that they would be getting. And we were checking in with each other on a daily basis. Did you follow up with this person? Did you follow up with this person? And we just did that for like a month and a half straight. And yeah, we sold it out. I think the spectacle of it being everybody's first show, every artist on the bill's first show, that's a piece of history that, you know, you don't get very often. And I think everyone was excited by that prospect, and the fact that they can be there to share in that moment with us that they knew meant so much to us was very, very special. It was at the Rebel Lounge in Phoenix, Arizona.
Which is not a small venue.
Is it 350?
Online, I saw 200, but that's still a respectable number.
It was in the 100, 200, whatever range or whatever. But the whole thing with that venue, I didn't know anything about it. That venue had been around for like 30 plus years. Since like the late 80s, maybe, or maybe even earlier. But I was looking up videos of the bands who had played it, and it was like Nirvana and Linkin Park and Red Hot Chili Peppers, Pearl Jam. It was just, it was like amazing. And the stage pretty much looked untouched. Like they had kept up with it, of course, with the modern technology and things like that. But I've been to a handful of venues across the US where like you walk into the room and you feel the history. And I think that that was very inspiring for us as well, especially for it being the first show. It's like to do it at a venue that is, that holds that sort of weight was really, really special and cool for us. And it was a great night to kick off all of our projects and to celebrate and to kind of usher in this new era for all of us individually.
First of all, I just want to go back and touch again on every artist playing their first show that night. That's so cool. Like usually there's maybe like one artist on the bill that does that. And I did also just look up to confirm it is 300 plus. You were right. Sorry about that. But either way, 200 would be fantastic as well. I saw Off With Their Heads the other night. I'm actually wearing an Off With Their Heads shirt. That was not planned. And they played a 94 cap and they sold out. That's a national touring band and they're stoked to sell out 94. So like 300 for five artists playing their first show ever in their hometown. That's so cool. I want to go more into the strategy of selling tickets. So what you're doing is you were DMing individual people, like anyone you knew from this list and saying, hey, will you come? Will you buy tickets? Were you doing pre-sales or were you just getting them to commit?
Pre-sales. Some people that aren't in the industry, like they might not understand like shows and how they work and just the overall thing. I started promoting the show before it was announced. Internally, on my end, I was like, there's going to be a show announcement coming. It's on this date. Because I didn't want to have it be like we announce it a month out and then people are like, oh, I have plans that day, this and that. Like I wanted to make my list pretty bulletproof in terms of they were almost a for sure yes. And something that was we all insisted on is we were told these people, we need bodies in the room. If you want to buy 20 tickets and you're trying to show support in that way, it's not to say that we don't appreciate it, but especially for promoters and stuff too. Like I've been the local band on bills where you're just trying to sell tickets to your mom and your dad because you can't like figure out a way to network and stuff. if we sold that show out, I wanted it to be body to body in that room so that it was kind of a statement to Arizona that, like, we've arrived. I think we did a really good job at that, and I'm just excited to continue that sort of momentum. But I would suggest that, just to kind of, as a little piece of advice to anybody that's listening to the podcast that maybe wants to do shows in their hometown, I would say that's a great strategy. Make an Apple note, write down each of the people individually, because people will escape your mind. You'd be surprised when it comes to actually thinking of, like, oh, I got to sell tickets. You're probably forgetting so many people. And some people will be like, oh, I'm going to bring my brother and my sister and my dad. There's four tickets. I'm going to do this. You know what I mean? So I would say to build lists, and then don't just say, hey, I'm playing a show, come out. Tell them why it's important. This is our first show. Like, the thing I did with mine was, I was like, you know, this is my debut show and I'm filming a music video that night and you're all going to be in it. People love to be involved in what you're doing. It's a natural thing. So if you can sell as many points like that as possible to them, the ticket will kind of sell itself without you having to be like, hey, come out, hey, come out. That's some advice I would give.
Yeah, because then there's going to be people who say, oh, I could be in a music video. Like, I'm down. That's absolutely a selling point. Same thing, like, hey, there's going to be a big party, whatever it ends up being. And especially, I love that you mentioned most people don't understand the music industry. They might not expect this to be a big event. They might think, oh, it's a bunch of local bands, like whatever, or local artists. Doesn't matter. It's like, no, this is actually an event. This isn't your average five locals on a Tuesday night. There's a big difference.
I think there was two things that were big. One was, there was a good amount of people that we sold tickets to in the first 2 weeks that were like our diehard, like, I'm not going to miss this. And then we sold so many tickets in the last 48 hours that we were having to, like, hit up people to see if they were still using tickets that they bought to, like, exchange for other people's tickets. It was really cool. We kept telling everybody, it's going to sell out. It's going to sell out. You need to get your tickets. And they were just like, eh. And then it was like, literally, like, it sold out. And then we had a bunch of people hitting us up for tickets. So it's just kind of like the spectacle of them not realizing that it was actually going to happen. And then, kind of to loop back around on the music video thing, this has been a thing that I've been thinking about a lot with this next chapter of life and music and all this sort of stuff, is I call them, like, catching the baseball moments. People their whole lives have those moments where they're like, I caught a baseball at this World Series game, or I shook this person's hand. And, like, they tell these stories for the rest of their lives. For instance, my dad, he went to a Bon Jovi music video shoot in the late 80s, and he was in one of their live music videos. And he talks about that still to this day. And it means a lot to him because he's a fan of the band. And you're like, I was there. I was there for that moment. I want to provide as many moments like that as I can to my fans, because I am a fan. I know what that means to me. I know what that feels like. And there's so many stories that I've been told over the years of people that were there at band's first shows, people that saw my cam in front of 50 people. And it's, like, unfathomable to me that, like, that actually happened. But there they are telling that story. And I think that if you're proactive about it, you can give your fans a chance to be a part of your story.
I love that. Like, that is the go-giver mindset. Have you read that book?
I haven't, but it sounds like it would be good.
It is a good book. And it sounds like you probably don't need to read it, but you would enjoy it, because it's basically about how, by giving to others, you end up receiving back. It's a great principle. And in many ways, it kind of parallels How to Win Friends and Influence People, which is a really scummy title. And it's about how to make friends, is really what it is. When it comes to being a go-giver, they go around four or five different categories of how you can be a giver. But doing what you're saying there and making those moments, the catch moments, that's huge, because you're already using that one moment to both give because they're excited and receive because they're getting you free promo now.
Absolutely. I really don't give a shit about money. I only care about money because I have to. When it comes to just affording things in life and paying bills and things, the thing I care about is allowing my music to be a vehicle that I can then connect with people, and hopefully that they can hear the songs that I've made and it can inspire them. The impact that music has had on my life is immeasurable. It's not something that's, like, comparable to anything else in my life. It's been definitely the biggest impactful thing ever. And there are many pillar moments that I've had throughout my life where I've gone to a show and I've met somebody, or I saw somebody do this or that, and they still live with me to this day. And they've been driving forces that helped me get to where I am now. If I can take 5 minutes and dedicate that to a conversation with a fan, or giving somebody some free merch for doing something, or this or that, like, just giving to the best of my ability, I hope that over the course of time of me doing this, that there can be enough people that have been positively impacted by what I've done. And maybe that can motivate them to get to where they want to go in life, whether it's music or whether it's some other endeavor. I think the gesture of kindness is something that resonates and stays with people.
Absolutely. And especially when in 2023, life is so fast paced, taking that 5 minutes, like you say, that could absolutely change someone's life. You never know.
I started a phone number yesterday.
Yeah, I meant to ask about that. I saw it on Twitter.
I've been starting to talk with fans, and it's just so cool, man, to hear about what they got going on in their day, or just like some of them have been like, you know, I don't know if you remember me, but we met in Pennsylvania or this or whatever on tour and this, you know what I mean? We're sharing stories like that. It's just so cool, man, just to have that moment.
Let's talk about that for a second, because I'm curious. I know there's apps to do that. Are you using an app for that, or did you like just set up a Google Voice number or something?
I'm using it through my distribution. Some people that thought it was a scam or like not really me or this or that, like it's me for sure. I'm sitting there replying to everybody one by one.
Which distributor are you using? Which one has that feature?
DistroKid.
Sweet. So if anyone wants to do this with your fans, check out DistroKid. I am not an affiliate. I think my friend Matt is. Maybe I'll drop his affiliate link in the show notes.
This is not a paid advertisement.
Right. Well, you know, since you mentioned touring with your band back in the day, I also wanted to ask, how is running your business as a solo artist different from when you were running a band? What are the key differences here?
I think a lot of ways it's kind of the same in some regards, because in a band, you have, you know, maybe three, four, however many members you have that you're collaborating with a lot on this sort of stuff. And I think that the biggest difference between being in a band and being a solo artist is I work with a lot of people to do what I do with this, just like a band. The only difference is it's revolving. I have a girl who makes my 3D visualizers. She's fantastic. Her name is Rebel Designer. I have an incredible co-writer that I work with on every single song I do. Her name is Kimberly George. My director, Jacob Reynolds. I have a team of people that I work with, whether it's marketing, whatever. The only difference is that if I so choose to, I can revolve this. I can work with a different producer. I can have somebody come in to play guitar on a song that's just for one song or this or that. And I really like the freedom, man. You know what I mean? I think I gained a lot from being in a band and learning kind of the tools of the trade in that regard. But I love the freedom that comes with being a solo artist and being able to try different things and work with different people and have there not be a hard feelings thing. You know, it's like, I'm going to have you come in and do this because you're great at it. And then maybe the next song I'll have this guy come in and do this because he's great at that. So I don't know, man. It's been fun for me.
Yeah. So in a way, the ability to bring in different styles, different elements instantly. I think that's great. That's something that I've already noticed in your songs. Like none of them really sound the same. You just dropped one a few days ago called Alt Pop, which there's a video to go with that as well. To me, it sounds like a rock song instrumentally. And then the vocals are pop. And I guess that's where the alt pop comes in, because it's not a straight up pop song, but it's not a straight up rock song. That's just so cool. Because like your other stuff, you had some like 80s influences in there. You had some pop influences. And this is like, there's a blazing guitar solo 2/3 of the way through the song. It's a bop. So what inspired that combination? Like, how did you say, hey, I'm going to like do a 180 and have a rock beat under this song?
It was a number of things. When I was writing the first handful of songs for this project, like Billy Madison and all those sort of songs, those were songs that I had actually started to write while I was still doing the top lining work with Vocal Kitchen. So my motive was a little different. I was just trying to write really catchy songs. I was in the studio. I wasn't thinking about live and things like that. When I started to do the latter half of the songs, like Impatient, Outcast, Brain Freeze, Real Boy, stuff like that, I was starting to experiment with bringing more energy in. And I also will preface it by saying this as well. I was putting rules on myself with this stuff because I was like, I was in a rock band. I want to do pop. We're not going to have real drums. We're not going to have loud guitars in the mix. We're going to have it be pop. And then as I moved into those songs, as I mentioned, Impatient stuff, I started to take off more of the rules. I started to write a bunch more songs that I was considering to be songs that would be great live, really fun songs to play live. And coupled with that, I booked some studio time with Joey Bradford, who anybody who isn't aware, he plays guitar in a band called The Used, which is one of my favorite bands of all time.
With good reason.
Yeah. So on top of that being really fun and surreal in that regard, I knew that if I went in the studio with him, if I wanted to make some really rock focused stuff, I could. So what I did was I took care of the ensuring as much of the alt aspect as I could, like with the verses being kind of rappy and, you know, trap elements and stuff and pop. And then when we went in the studio and did them, I was like, let's lean really hard into the rock thing because I know that I've handled a good amount of the pop and the hip hop aspects. And I think that the fusion will be really good. And it's just so exciting for me, these songs, because I think I only heard one at this point, but these songs feel like if anybody from any part of my journey heard these songs, this is the time for them to listen because it's elements of what I learned from Vocal Kitchen with the catchy pop writing, incorporating the hip hop elements with the more rappy vocals, and then big rock anthemic moments. And yeah, man, I'm just really excited to be able to have him play guitar on it as well and play the solo and add his flair.
That was my next question, was going to be, did Joey play the guitar on it?
He did. There was a funny moment when we were in the studio and we were building the layers and stuff. And I don't know if I'd cut vocals yet or not, but we were in there just vibing and stuff. And he at one point is like, all right, man, we're going to track guitar. And he starts handing me the guitar. And I was like, nah, dude, I'm good. You can handle it. I wrote the riffs on it, like the main riff that's an alt pop and stuff. But I'm very much, when I'm in the studio, if there's a guy that can do it better than me, I'm not going to be like, this is my solo project, so I'm just going to do everything. If there's a guy that's next to me that I'm like, this guy can rip, he can have at it. He just did a fantastic job, man.
I love that attitude. I think that's so important because a lot of artists are stuck in the mindset of we have to do everything ourselves. Even if they're working with an engineer, like, no, we are the band. And just one example that Matt shared, my co-host, who I'm not sure, he might have been on the episode we did with you. I can't remember. It was 2 years ago.
It sounds familiar. Maybe he was.
One thing he says is that when his band goes into the studio, their guitarist plays both the lead and rhythm parts. They have two guitarists. And the guitarist also plays the bass parts because that is going to be the tightest, most cohesive sound they can get because it's one person playing all the things. And so that one person's little quirks in rhythm and technique are going to be in the whole project. They, as a band, have decided, like, yeah, we're okay with this. The bass player and the rhythm guitarist say, that's totally fine. We get it. Other bands might not be okay with that.
A lot of them aren't.
Exactly. And ultimately, it's up for that band to decide. But if you want the best product, you have to do exactly that, what you were saying, Chad, and say, hey, you're better at this. You do this. And I mean, Joey Bradford, what else can you do? Like, there's not going to be anyone else better in the room unless you have like Jade Puget in the room or something like that. And even then, it's a close call.
That's kind of my whole thing with this project. And you learn this skill through co-writing. If I'm writing with Kim and we're working on one of the songs and she suggests an awesome lyric that totally fits, which happens a lot, I'm not going to be like, hey, I didn't think of that. Or let me try to put my twist on it. Like, if it's good, it's good. The best idea wins. I want my songs to be as amazing as they can be because that matters more to me than who came up with what, who played what. Like, I've come to really understand artists like a Michael Jackson or people like that that are solo artists, that maybe Michael Jackson didn't play the guitar on Beat It or play the drums, but he was the one that was in there that was like, you should have it be like this. He was the visionary behind these choices. I very much feel the same sort of calling when I'm in the studio. Like, if Joey's in there and he's an incredible guitar player, why would I not utilize that? Or if there's another person that worked on three of the songs that will be on the EP, his name is Hiram Hernandez. He's a great, great producer as well. And when we kickballed the songs to him, he added even more layers in. It just made the song better. I would encourage all bands to take a step back and to think of the final product, not about necessarily their percentage that they've put on the final product. These songs are going to outlive all of us. What can you do to make these songs the best that they can be? Whatever that is, I would encourage them to go for that.
I love that. And just to add, you know who doesn't care at all who did what? The fans.
Yeah, exactly.
If they can vibe to it, if they can jam out, whatever, they're stoked. The amount of people who are actually going to go look at the credits is tiny. And I feel like every musician has gone through that phase when they're in high school and they're like, oh my God, this band didn't do it themselves. What a sellout. Like, oh. Most people, if they still have that attitude, are still playing in a garage band. That sounds terrible. I'm just going to make that generalization. I used to be that guy. And now I'm just like, I love collaborations. It sounds better. So let's do more collaborations, please.
Absolutely. I think that there's some bit of a stretch with that, but let's say, for instance, like if there's a pop song that has 15 writers on it, which happens, it's not really my cup of tea to like have that many cooks in the kitchen. But if they chose that, that was their stylistic choice to do that. There's certain things that I'm unwavering on when it comes to the brand of this project, like my characters or my cadence or things like that. But that's stuff that's nipped right at the beginning. And then after that, what we do is open doors.
Right. And there's got to be that foundation of you. And that's the whole point, because otherwise it's not your music. Working with other people to take that and turn it up to 11, that's the perfect combination, in my opinion. And that's basically what you're doing.
I Don't Want to Miss a Thing by Aerosmith was written by Diane Warren. She was the only writer on the song. Look at what that song has done for that band.
And for her. She's getting all the royalties. They'll get the artist's cut after the label has recouped, which I assume they have by now because it's Aerosmith.
It's been like 30 years.
She gets the songwriting royalties. Good for her. Sick Puppies from, you know, 10, 15 years ago. Amazing band. Almost every single one of their songs was co-written by a team of writers who wrote a lot of Justin Bieber songs. If you look at their list of clients, I can't remember their name, but if you look up any Sick Puppies song on BMI or ASCAP, you'll see them listed.
I loved that first Sick Puppies album, dude. I remember that.
Yeah, dude, Dress Up as Life. Oh, it's so good. You just look up and their list of clients is like Justin Bieber, Selena Gomez. It's all pop stars. And then there's Sick Puppies. You're like, that totally does not fit, but they pulled it off. It sounds phenomenal. I don't know to what extent, like if Sick Puppies brought them the ideas and then they tweaked it, or if they brought the ideas to Sick Puppies and Sick Puppies' deal was just like, yeah, we're listed as co-writers. Like, I don't know what the deal was, but it worked. So it doesn't matter.
Yeah, there's also the side of who cares? As long as you have a song that's cool.
Yeah. And even today, like I was just listening to Trash Boat. Their big single from their last album, Bad Entertainment, is a co-write with the guitarist from Silverstein. Guess what? It's one of the best songs by far on the album because you have somebody who's been doing this for like 20 years co-writing with you. It just sounds sick. So having that collaboration, which this is turning into a very philosophical discussion slash rant, I'm so stoked that you recognize that and that you are doing that.
Thank you, man. I'll loop back around to this real quick, but the reason why I will call myself an alt-pop artist and I will never consider myself to be a rock artist is that there is way too much gatekeeping in rock and people deciding what you can do and what's rock. And I have so many problems, not with the genre. The genre's fine. I have so many problems with the fans. They always say, you know, I wish more bands were doing this. And then a band does it. And then everyone shits all over them. And you know what I mean? Doesn't give them any sort of grace or any sort of credit. And I think that we just need to stop this nonsense. Like, we got to be lifting each other up and encouraging each other to try different things. Think about rock history. Every time that there's been a band that's come out and that's really hit, it's been the opposite of what came before, always. And I look at hip hop shows these days a lot of the time, like Rolling Loud and stuff like that, or even big EDM productions. I'm like, this feels like a rock show. For instance, there's a DJ named Kazo. I don't know if you've heard of him before, but he collaborates with a lot of metal and rock artists on his songs. They're heavy songs that he makes, but he's a DJ. And he just, on this tour that he's gone out on, he took out a friend of mine. He goes by Ty Drums online. And then he has a guitar player on stage. And it's literally like metal songs being brought to life, but with EDM production. Rock fans might look at that and be like, this isn't real rock because of X, Y, and Z. But it's really not that much different than looking at Buddy Holly and then looking at Korn. It's distance of time and it's the advancement of a genre. And I just hope that over the course of time that fans kind of learn to be more accepting of things and more open-minded, because there's a lot to gain from what's going on right now. So much to gain.
Yeah, we don't have to be stuck in the 90s or mid-2000s.
We don't have to be stuck anywhere, man. One of my favorite artists ever is Lil Wayne. When he put out Rebirth, and I think it was 2009 or 2010, it had like rock guitars and he was playing guitar on it and he was getting trolled online where he can't play this and that. But do you know how bold that is for a hip hop artist to try to incorporate a genre that is arguably doing not as well as the genre that he's playing? That's huge. I think about this a lot. I'm sorry if I'm going off on a tirade with this, but there's two situations I think of with this. Fans that have never listened to rock for whatever reason, but they've heard Lil Wayne and they hear guitars. Maybe that inspires them to pick up a guitar. And then when they pick up a guitar, they learn about Led Zeppelin and AC/DC and Green Day and Blink and all this other stuff. It's a gateway for them. And it was the same thing with 5 Seconds of Summer when they first came out. Everyone was fighting against them like, they're just this One Direction boy band. You're entitled to have that opinion. However, flip the coin. They're on stage playing to a bunch of fans that don't listen to Green Day, and they're listening to them play a cover of American Idiot on a North American tour where they're playing to 20,000 people a night. They're exposing all these young kids to this that might go home that night, listen to American Idiot, then might listen to Descendants. You know what I mean? They might go back. That's what we did when we heard AFI, when we heard Blink. We listened to who their influences were. I just want to encourage everybody to be excited. If there's somebody that's out there that's repping a style of music and you might not even care for it, like whether it's like Playboi Carti, Lil Uzi Vert, something like that, there's a silver lining in it. And I hope that the culture can shift to a point where you can be like, you know what? I maybe can't listen to this genre of music or this specific artist, but I can appreciate what they're doing.
I love that. And I think to sum up what you're saying in a very current way, as of what you're saying today, which we're recording this like a month before it comes out. It's March 1st. It comes out on March 28th. Lizzo, last night or the night before, was in Hamburg and covered Rammstein. And I am not a Lizzo fan by any means. Like, respect to her, but it's not my taste. But I'm like, that is sick. And then I see all the metal people being like, oh, this is terrible. It's the worst thing ever. I'm like, it's actually pretty good. Okay, it's not this like 6'5" German dude like smashing his fist on his thigh while he's singing. Who cares? Just seeing that genre crossover is fantastic.
There's a story that this brings about. I don't know if we talked about this in the last podcast. If I'm reiterating, I apologize. But with this conversation always comes up the topic of Kim Kardashian wearing metal band t-shirts, or any of the Kardashian wearing metal band t-shirts. And I was talking to this guy about it. He said he went to like some house party and he put on Def Leppard, and this girl was wearing a Def Leppard shirt and she didn't know who the band was. And he was like, oh my God, why are you wearing this shirt without this? Again, I encourage you, flip the coin. What's the group that you have on your shirt? What's the name of them?
Off With Their Heads.
Off With Their Heads. Probably a great group of guys, probably out there grinding, doing their best. Imagine that there was a famous model that wore that t-shirt. There is a fraction of the people that see that, that will then go listen to that band and fall in love with their music. It'll expose them to a new fan base. That's where you got to get out of the, why are you wearing this shirt if you don't know? Like, look at the other side of the coin. Look at the positive side that could come from that. I saw footage from the Misfits playing Madison Square Garden a handful of years ago. And I'm like, dude, when they broke up, they were not that size. They were like playing CD punk clubs, you know, on the East Coast.
40 years of hype. That builds up a lot.
40 years of hype. And then also the fact that Jerry has been such a relentless genius with selling off that.
The skull logo.
Yes, so that it can be sold in skate shops and this, and then it piques curiosity. Not everyone that wears a Misfits skull is going to be a Misfits fan, but a fraction of them will be. And it keeps the wheels turning. There's a reason why we're still talking about the Misfits in 2023 when they formed in the 70s. I really want people to try to see that positive side because it's definitely there.
Yeah. Your example of like a woman wearing that. People never say that to guys. I wear band shirts daily and no one's ever like, oh, name three songs. But I have a bunch of friends who are women and they've been asked to name three songs. And I get that that's like a meme online, but that honestly happens. And I can see how frustrating that is for people. It's like, who cares? I don't know every Off With Their Heads shirt. I know two albums and I love those albums and I know them front to back. And then the other album's like, okay, I've listened to them once or twice. I know they exist. Are you going to call me out for not listening to those?
It's the same with AFI for me. Like I became a bigger fan, really seeing The Sorrow Forward, but Art of Drowning, they have albums before that. It's not that I hate them or I dislike them. I just, that's when I fell in love with the band and that's my greater impact. Now, does that mean that I can't have an AFI tattoo or that I can't buy a t-shirt or go see them live? No, it's different for everybody. That's even a form of gatekeeping. So a 25-year-old female that doesn't look alternative, she can't wear a Slayer shirt? What's up with that? That's lame.
They also say, don't judge a book by the cover. You never know. I've seen some quote unquote normie people, for lack of a better term, and they're like the biggest metalheads ever. And you would never expect it.
That's even a bigger conversation.
We could get super deep in philosophical. I can't say that word. Philosophical.
I know what you mean.
The listeners do too. Don't gatekeep my English. Anyway, Chad, man, it has been a pleasure catching up with you. Thank you so much for coming on the show. Before we let you go, I have two more questions. The first of which is, if you're able to share, you already kind of hinted at an EP. What are your plans for the rest of the year? You've already released Alt Pop just a few days ago as of when we released this.
As you said, my new single Alt Pop has just come out on March 24th. I hope you guys enjoy it. It's truly the beginning of a new era for me. The music video dives into some crazy concepts. Basically, I've created this group that's called The Chatter. And basically, their whole sort of MO is they're trying to put this message out to the world in hopes to convert people into followers. That seems like it would be somewhat of a positive thing, but they're only doing it to kind of bait them to them so that they can then control them and use them to kind of destroy society. And where we pick up on in the alt-pop music video is they've already done a pretty good job of that. And I'm trying to break into their headquarters to play my message over their loudspeakers and essentially sort of convert their followers back to remembering the positivity and the light. As you'll see in the video too, it looks like the color has been sucked out of my world. And I think that's something that can resonate with a lot of people, especially in the day-to-day society that we live in now. I'm excited to share more of that world. It's kind of interconnected within this EP. The EP should be out, I'd say, like summertime, but there will be singles in between alt pop and the full EP coming out. I'm trying to just do some more shows in Arizona. We're working on a show for LA, and just expect a lot of world building type of content over the next handful of months. And I would say just in general with the music to expect the unexpected, because there's specifically a song that's on this EP that is like almost the invert of alt pop. So kind of playing into that diversity that I love to play around in.
Well, that's fantastic. I'm looking forward to hearing all the other songs, but especially that one, and see what kind of a loop that throws me for. I love just getting hit by something that's totally different, but still is cohesive as a part of the whole work. That's always so fun to hear. All right, Chad, well, last question, man. Where should people go to learn more about you?
For the most part, it's just at Chad Kowal.
K-O-W-A-L for people who aren't looking at their screens.
And then as far as all future announcements go, I'm going to be discussing these on my text thread before I do on social media. So shoot me a text at 480-934-0067. And we can chat about what you got going on in your day. And you guys will be the first to know what's going on in future announcements.
Okay, sick. And drop that number again, just so people don't have to rewind if they didn't catch it the first time.
Yeah, the number is 480-934-0067.
All right, sweet. Chad, dude, thank you so much. It's been a blast chatting with you again. I'm looking forward to number 3 sometime in the future.
Absolutely, man. Sounds great. Thank you for having me.
My pleasure. Thanks again and have a great day.
You as well.
Hey, you. Yeah, you, with the headphones or the speakers. You've made it to the end of the episode. Thank you so much for listening. While I still have you here, if you're not already in the BandHive Facebook community, it would be great to see you there. We have over 600 like-minded musicians who are asking questions, sharing their experiences and advice, and much more. So if you want to improve your band's business, look no further than the BandHive Facebook community. You can find it by searching for BandHive on Facebook, that's BANDHIVE, or going to bandhive.rocks/group. Again, that's bandhive.rocks/group, and that will automatically redirect you to our Facebook community. I look forward to seeing you there soon.